Good morning, sir. Before we get started, what is your name, sir?
My name is Stephen Bruni.
Okay, Mr. Bruni, if you would just hold on for one moment.
I have Mr. Bruni.
Okay, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse will conduct your hearing, so just hold on, sir. That will be the next voice you will hear.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Bruni. Could you please state your full name and your ADC number for the record?
My name is Stephen Allen Bruni. My ADC number is 037139.
All right, thank you. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. Thank you. For regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge, for which you became eligible, or you will become eligible, March 18th of 18. The people conducting, the board members conducting this hearing today, you can see on the screen, if you look down at the opposite end of the bench from me, is the Honorable David Neal. Right next to him, the Honorable Michael Johnson. Right in the center of the bench, sorry about that, is Dr. C.T. Wright, our board chairman. Right next to me is the Honorable Louis Quinones, and my name is Gail Rittenhouse. I'll be the panel chair for your hearing today.
Okay.
Start with just a brief summary. Mr. Bruni is 61 years old, and he's serving 28 years to life for a combination of two counts of kidnapping. He's been paroled, I should state, from a previous 9 counts that were running concurrent, and those 9 counts were kidnapping, 2 sexual assault, sexual abuse, 3 more sexual assault, kidnapping, and aggravated assault. And from those, which were running concurrently, he was paroled to the current sentences that he's serving, which are now kidnapping, sexual assault, aggravated assault was in there, has expired, another sexual assault, and 1 more sexual assault. Those combined are concurrent and are running for 28 years to life. Those crimes occurred in roughly October of 1979. He was convicted in a jury trial and was sentenced on October 6, 1980. He did appeal, and the appeal was affirmed in part and remanded in part, and counts 9 and 11 were resentenced at that time. Mr. Bruni, is there anything that I've said thus far that's incorrect?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. The sentence that I'm currently serving is 28 years, not 2 life. I have a life sentence attached to that.
Okay, 28 years. I'm corrected. Thank you very much, sir. Just a very brief summary of the crime. There's several crimes, different victims, and they just involved him encountering a victim various times of the day, usually a female walking alone. These were in Tucson, and had a weapon, or the victim perceived there was a weapon, and took the victim to a private area in these instances and performed various sex acts with this victim, with the various victims. Mr. Bruni had fairly limited criminal history. There was a former conviction for a robbery for which he served a term, and that had expired at the time of these offenses. His discipline history in prison has been very minimal. In fact, he has had no discipline since 2003, and overall, to be in prison that long and have that few disciplines is actually pretty remarkable. This is his first parole hearing before the board on this particular these particular group of crimes, but he had had, as I mentioned, he had had the previous parole granted to this consecutive sentence in July of 1999. Yes, that's correct. We have no letters of support in our packet. We do have one victim representative here today, and we have no supporters here today that I'm aware of. Mr. Bruni, could you just tell us in your own words what happened the day of the crimes?
Sure. During the month of October in 1979, I was a really messed up kid. I was a drug addict, alcoholic. The life I had lived prior to that time was, as explained in my letter of introduction and my parole plan, was not conducive to any kind of normalcy whatsoever. Earlier that month, my wife had a nervous breakdown, and so I went on heaby into drugs, I went heavy into alcohol, and I just literally lost it. I went out and I kidnapped two ladies, sexually assaulted them. I attempted to kidnap a third lady, and I got chased off. I was later caught, and I messed up bad. I was my messed up kid. At that time, the thought process was not there. I was ignorant, pretty much illiterate, uneducated, a drug addict, and an alcoholic. That's what happened back then.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bruni. You did submit, and I do want to note for the record, a very well-organized and detailed release plan that includes a lot of information, a lot of a very good summary of what has happened and what transpired before the crime and since. And it gives a great deal about what you've learned. It appears you've done a lot of programming to include some cultural diversity classes, some substance abuse, peer classes, reentry, just an extensive array, and a lot of trade skills, carpentry, welding, and some other, really a lot of programming. And that's very commendable of you. As far as a release plan, it looks like you're planning to go to a halfway house and you want to use your woodworking skills, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Over the years in prison, I gave up drugs, I gave up alcohol. I've educated myself, I've learned work ethics. The cons and the staff was more than kind enough to teach me quite a few different skills. I've been well known for my woodworking. There's not really much anything I can't make out of wood. Getting an opportunity to make a parole, if I can go to SACRAC, I can start out nice and slow, put together a life. I have 13 halfway houses here that are more than willing to work with me. I have to send money to guarantee my place, but they won't accept anything until I've made parole. They can't hold a bed for me until March. But getting a place to live and getting a job would be just part of my release of getting out here and putting together and starting a continuation of this new life that I started putting together 38 years ago when I came down.
All right, thank you, Mr. Bruni. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions for you. Any questions for Mr. Bruni?
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead,
I was just going to ask a general question. Mr. Bruni stated that back when the offense was committed, his thought process was just not right then. That's not a direct quote, but I want to know what is his thought process. What is your thought process now that would convince this board now that you're a changed person? So I know you have all these programs. We reviewed them. We reviewed your progress report and all of your release plans. They are great. But in your own words, how can you convince me as a board member that you're ready to go out and be a productive citizen today, sir?
Well, that's going to take a couple minutes if you don't mind.
I'm so glad you're willing to play. This is your hearing, yes, sir.
Well, that 23-year-old kid that I was, physically and mentally, no longer exists. The person I am today, I have a work ethic. I've matured. I'm educated. The programming has taught me a lot, but what taught me more was the SOTP program that I went through and then helped assist teaching in 1980s in the Iowa prison system with Dr. Yahya Hassad. He gave me an understanding of why I did what I did. The drugs and the alcohol were contributing factors, not the reason. The reason that I committed the crimes that I did was because I was a very messed up mind of a child. Being sexually abused all my life is not an excuse. It is a contributing factor. I've learned over the years to forgive those that hurt me, and I pray. I still pray daily that the people I have hurt, and I know how I hurt them. I know how intensely I hurt them. I know the damage I did to them because it was done to me. And I can't change that. But I did change my thinking process, my mindset, a work ethic. I never worked before. I love working now. I like helping people. And I like learning. If given an opportunity to get out, I know who I am today is not that person that was there 38 years ago. Whether you people grant me a parole today or not, I know I've changed. I know who I am. I'm not going to hurt anybody. I'm going to go out one of these days and start a life. Nice and slow, one day at a time, like I do my prison time in here. I'm not a troublemaker. I obey the rules, which is the same as obeying the laws on the streets. As for how can I convince you? Well, the only way I can convince you people is if you give me this opportunity to go out there, and I'll show it to you. I've already showed it to myself in here all these years. Give me this opportunity to go out there and prove it to you people, and I think you'll be surprised.
Thank you, sir. Let me just ask one other question, and maybe I didn't hear you correct during your statement there. You stated that, I believe, some years ago, I think you said in Iowa or somewhere, that you had this sexual training, SOECP training. Have you had any since then? Have you had any in Arizona at all, sir?
The sex offender treatment program was started by myself and two other inmates along with a head psychologist out there called Dr. Yahya Hassad in the Iowa State Penitentiary, where I spent 10 years. This SOTP program, being the first ever, was intense, open, and very, very painful for us guys to go through. As for an SOTP program here in the Arizona State Prison System, because of the amount of time I've had, I've never been available to, it hasn't been available to me. I haven't been eligible for it. I did make a statement in my parole plan that I will be seeking counseling on the streets. After 38 years in prison, that just makes sense to me.
Thank you so very much, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Mr. Kinnear?
No, he asked the question.
He asked the very question. Mr. Johnson?
So you had the training. So can you just kind of tell me what spurred all of this? Because this happened within a matter of about 10 days when all of these crimes actually occurred. So what was it that sparked that situation within you, sir? It's like one was happened October 9th, then you had October 14th, then you had October 17th. So it was just a repeated crime that was committed, even the one where you approached the victim and dogs started barking and they ran, he ran away. But what was it that caused it? That's a concern, that just something sparked where you just decided to do these sexual assaults and kidnappings, all are armed?
Yes, sir. You're looking for what is, they call the trigger. What was that trigger that kicked me off? At the time, I was married to a lady who was 9 years my senior, and she had three children by prior marriage. In no way, shape, or form are they involved in any way at all. They are just innocent victims, just like the people that went and hurt. My wife went to work one morning, had a nervous breakdown, and went into the Southern Arizona Palo Verde Mental Health Center. The next thing I know, my world was rocked. I had absolutely no control anymore. The wife was in the hospital. She had the children taken to Casa de los Niños. My children were taken away from me. The children and I loved each other. I took care of them. We were great together. The trigger was the helplessness, the inability to have control over my situation, and the only way that I knew how to strike out or to so-called gain control while being high and drunk and mind-altering as I was going through was I went out and forced myself to control a situation by kidnapping innocent people and hurting them sexually. The sexual aspects of the crime came from my abuse as a child, thinking that that's how you gain power over somebody else. Since then, I've learned power is not to be given or taken. I've learned how to live within a structure where I have very little power over my own self. I understand that. I've grown up. I've educated, I'm mature. I've worked with a psychologist for quite a few years back in, and I understand what my trigger points were. And if I'm anywhere near seeing such an action again, I'll be down talking to a doctor. I'll check myself in if I have to. I don't have any concerns about these issues anymore, because I know that the person I am today would never harm another person ever again, in any way, shape, or form, not intentionally.
So after the first victim, that when you had the trigger, after you had the first victim, what made you continue on then, if you were just...
The day my wife checked in on the 6th, that was the first trigger. The second trigger was when she and her doctor decided that they wanted to put her children in Casa de los Niños.
So Casa de los Niños, what is that?
That's a home for children. Okay. It's like a child protective service for the children.
Okay, all right, thank you, sir.
The doctor wasn't concerned about the children, he was concerned about me. And while I was talking with him, when I was attending her counseling sessions, he wanted me to come in and receive treatment. In my pride, in my altered mental state that I personally, please understand, the drugs and the alcohol are not the excuse. They're a part of the symptom. Not having any kind of education, maturity, or thought process to even think of such a thing as help, getting help for myself. I went back to what I've always done as a child, as a young adult. Drugs, alcohol, to the extent where I was hardly functional physically. The second trigger was the kids leaving, and it was just an escalation. If they hadn't have caught me, to be honest, I'm afraid it would have continued. So I'm glad I was caught. Seriously, I'm glad I was caught. The first 3 years of my life in prison was hell. Being a convicted serial rapist in prison is hard enough as it is, much less losing the wife, the children, losing all my friends and family. That stress alone, going through withdrawals from drugs and alcohol, if it hadn't been for the long-timers, the lifers grabbing hold of me and teaching me, smacking me upside the head quite a few times, telling them I'm going to learn, or they're going to kill me, I learned. And when I got off the drugs and I got off the booze and realized, hey, I have a mind, these little boys taught me how to use it. Well, I don't do drugs. I have nothing to do with either of those characters in here, drugs or alcohol or those that do either. I'm an older man now. I'll be 62 years old the last day of this month. That child's gone. I've grown up. My mind's changed. My thought processes have changed. I get out there. I get the opportunities. For the last 12 years, I've been putting together the resources in Tucson, Phoenix, and for the rest of the state for pre-release for these guys as they get out. I know the resources that are available to me in Tucson, and I will be making use of them. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Mr. Bruni?
Yes.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to make sure. I just had a follow-up question. I was going to ask you something that you already answered on your own, and that was, do you believe that you would have continued with your activity or your criminal activity if you hadn't been caught? And you answered that, and I think that was pretty important information. I think the only follow-up question I have is, were these feelings of acting out in this way building up in you leading up to this crime prior to your wife's mental breakdown?
To be honest, that was one of the questions Dr. Hassad asked. Yes, sir. Her checking herself in having a nervous breakdown only accelerated a timetable that had been started since I was a six-year-old child. It was something that, whether she was a loss of the job or trigger points, something else would have happened. And the person that I was then, sooner or later, I was going to go out and hurt something.
Thank you for being honest with this board, Mr. Bruni. No further questions.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Bruni, you mentioned family and friends. Do you have any family or friends in Arizona or anywhere?
All my family's dead. All my friends are dead. I've got two friends in Virginia, and I've got two friends in California that have offered to send me money so I can get myself into a halfway house. I have no friends here in Arizona. I've been in prison all this time. But I do have a Christian couple in Phoenix who are more than willing to help me out. The biggie is, before I can get any help coming in from these people, is you ladies and gentlemen there that give me an opportunity to go out there and prove it.
Understood.
They'll give me a hand.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bruni. We have one representative here today who wishes to speak. So, Ms. Wright, would you like to come up to the podium? And if you would, just state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Marty Reich.
Thank you. And what would you like to tell the board?
Mr. Bruni, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can.
You really do need to address the board, but okay. He'll hear you. He can hear you.
Thank you. I was a 21-year-old college student when Mr. Bruni picked me off the street, kidnapped me, and raped me. Broke my jaw, left me in fear for my life. The humiliating part for me was not the rape, the sexual assault, or the kidnapping. It was because I believed he had a weapon. As he put me in the car and forced my head down, I asked to feel the weapon so that I would know I was not submitting to an act that I was free to walk away from. Had he not had a weapon, I would have walked away. I lifted my hand across the seat and he placed a cold, hard pistol on my palm. And my fate was sealed at that point. I thought I would rot in the desert. He had, when he hit me from behind on that dark, lonely street, knocked off my glasses, and I'm legally blind without them. I felt defenseless. I felt afraid. I felt every bit a victim. He kept me for several hours, sexually assaulting me orally, even though I had a broken jaw, and penetrated me vaginally for the first time. I was a virgin at the time. That was my first sexual, full sexual experience. I'm shaking now recalling it. However, Mr. Bruni was free to harm me farther. He was free to leave me to rot in the desert. But for some reason, his, I don't know if it's his spirit or his personhood, allowed him to return me to the hospital where I was headed on my way to work when he abducted me off the street. I was humiliated as I worked in the lab, and my specimens were submitted to the lab. Gonorrhea cultures, syphilis cultures. I worried about pregnancy. I worried about HIV. I worried about all the other sexually transmitted diseases that even now, HPV, because he had a prison history. Who knows what I carry today because of that action. I heard a lot about his life during the time, the hours that he held me captive. Enough to know that when the police picked him up, and I was uncertain about whether this man should go to prison for many years, enough to identify him down to every detail that he told me. I'm here today because I thought it might be a chance to bring some closure to that long story. And I was one of the fortunate ones. My dad was a OBGYN. And I know that rape is a violent, not a sexual crime. I know that victims are happenstance in some cases. And I was not raped in my home where I had to fear for my safety every day. All I had to do was be afraid of the big world out there. I have children of my own now, and I have a grandchild. And I came here today to hope to bring some closure. And I've been very comforted in a way by what I've heard Mr. Bruni say. I looked up the word clemency, and it includes in the definition mercy. And I feel that in some odd way he showed me mercy by letting me not rot in the desert. He didn't continue to harm me after the initial event, and I was able to go on and live my life. I think it's a twist of fate that I love woodworking. I don't do it myself because I don't have the knowledge, but I know how healing it is. And it sounds to me like this gentleman has learned, changed, grown. Anybody can be messed up. I honestly don't think he would continue to harm people. I think he has the resources in place. And I knew none of this when I came here. It's what he's spoken today that's allowed me to think that perhaps would not harm other people. And I thank you, people on the board, for contacting me and allowing me to bring closure to my story and to this point. And I thank the Arizona justice system for bringing this man, taking him off the street, protecting other women like me for the many years that he's been in jail. But I'm comfortable that he's learned and healed, and I just feel so much better to be able to bring this to a closure from my point of view. So thank you for allowing me to speak, for reaching out to me and bringing me to this place.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Quinones?
Yes, I do have one, ma'am. And I know that it's clumsy. I think you were a very brave and amazing human being. That was an amazing statement. I think, and I want to make sure that I'm correct on this, Ms. Panel Chairman, I think that he has a clear SED date of September 2020?
Let me check. Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I wasn't straying on that one. I guess I just wanted to ask you, as a victim and from my own greater understanding, with him, for the amount of time that he served in the prison system, that SED set I'm sorry, that sentence end date is set. How do you feel about that?
I don't understand the term.
Oh, I'm sorry. He has a sentence end date of September of 2020, which means it's not a life sentence that could possibly go on forever, or a natural life sentence. It has an end date.
In 3 years.
Yes. Uh-huh. And how do you feel about that as a victim?
It sounds like he'll be ready when that date comes, or when his parole comes. I really don't understand much about the process, but it sounds like he's anxious to begin a life, and I would not deny someone a productive opportunity at a life. I had something taken away from me, and I believe he's paid for that and learned. My fear in coming here was that he would not have learned anything and go out and not have the resources and harm people to get to survive, but it doesn't sound like that's the case, so comfortable with whatever.
I won't get too personal, but did you stay involved in medicine?
I did. I'm a nurse.
Oh,
yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And I meant what I said. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Is this the first time you've come before the board? Or?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I don't have much dealing with the law in my quiet
life. All
right. So that was the first time medical. I was in court years and years ago, and now this is the last time I'll be in court.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for Ms. Reck? Thank you very much. We
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate your
Thank
testimony.
You.
Thanks.
Excuse me a moment, ma'am.
Mr. Bruning?
Yes.
We'll take a statement from you in just a moment, but you really can only address the board. But
okay.
Ms. Reich is in the room, so she'll hear. But you can speak to us. Okay, sir? Just a moment. What's that? Okay. So we're coming to the end of your hearing, Mr. Bruni, but we want you to give a final statement, if you would, anything you want the board to know, and particularly, and you've said this, I think, in many ways throughout this hearing, why you think you should be paroled. So what would you like to say as a final statement to the board, sir?
I'm sorry, Martha.
Okay.
I've prayed to this lady and all my victims every day of my life in here. I didn't know if they were going to be okay or not. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. You were so innocent. Nobody knew. I didn't know you. Nobody deserves what I did to them. Nobody deserves what I did to this lady. I'm sorry. All these years, I never knew if my prayers were answered for these people.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bruni. And anything else that you would like to the board to know?
I know I've changed. The fact that my prayers have been answered makes it even better for me today. All I can say is this. Till I hate tomorrow, I know that the person who I was no longer exists. All I want is a chance to go out and start a life, do what I can to help people however I can. You board members will make a decision today that are going to wonder, is this man going to, has he changed or is he the same as he was? I know I've changed. The only way I can prove that to you is for you to grant me a parole. I'll be more than happy to prove it to all of you.
All right, Mr. Bruni, thank you very much. The board is going to go into discussion. And it may sound like we're talking to you, Mr. Bruni, or to someone in the room here, but it's really the board discussing among itself. We don't discuss cases before we get right here because we operate under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. So we haven't discussed your case before right now. But if you would just remain on the line there and just remain silent, and we'll be right back with you shortly. So the board is now in discussion. Mr. Bruni is has explained his state of mind back then and his current state of mind very well, I think. He's an individual who, although he did some terrible, terrible crimes, for which there were multiple victims, which we've only heard from one victim today. There were other victims of this crime as well. He has matured a great deal. He clearly is not the individual. I didn't know him back then, but I can't believe he could be the same individual. He's done a lot of programming to prepare himself. Has somewhat limited plans, but based on his resources, his current resources, he's made as good a plan as he can. He's tried to prepare himself in prison through sex offender programming and a reentry class and certainly a lot of trades that he's learned. He's obviously very remorseful, and I'm actually seeing Mr. Bruni as a good candidate for parole, but I would listen to wisdom of my fellow board members. Mr. Quinones.
Thanks. I would like to continue the discussion by saying something practical, and it's why I brought it up earlier, and that is to say that with a firm sentence end date, I think there's something to be said about a supervised transition back to the community in the interest of public safety.
Good point.
It's going to happen. It's not something that this board has control over. And I think the pragmatic position is to consider a supervised and safe transition back to the community. That's where I'm at. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Neal?
Having had cognitive experience as a victim myself, I find it very compelling when a victim will come forward and make the type of statement that we heard today. Most victims that show up in these hearings are very animate about not wanting the inmate to be released. They're short on, and I don't want to say forgiveness, but and I understand fully, but it is very compelling to hear a victim explain that the testimony of the inmate has actually changed her mind about, you know, how things are and everything, and it's a strong point in favor of wanting to grant parole or home rest to Mr. Bruni. We do hear a lot from the inmates that is somewhat scripted, but anytime I went before any kind of a board, I sat down and practiced and wrote down what I thought that I needed to say and everything else like that. But it was clear today that the victim's statement came from the heart after hearing Mr. Bruni and what he had to say and everything. So I agree that a controlled transition back into society would be the best for Mr. Bruni and for society, because you put somebody out there that spent 40 years in prison without any assistance, they're a lot more likely to repeat than if they've got a good program and community support. So yes, I would be in favor of a home arrest situation.
Mr. Johnson?
If I say that, I think that, first I commend the victim for coming down and being able to testify. I do think that Mr. Bruni has done some exceptional training since he's been incarcerated, but I'm not in agreement. But I think that looking at his sentence and what he actually received is 28 years. He's received a 28-year sentence, and he served that, and he's on his next consecutive 28-year sentence. But in between there, he had an attempted sexual assault that was a 20-year sentence, a sexual assault that was a 28-year, sexual assault that was 6-year, 28-year sexual assault, another one for 28 years. Attempted sexual assault was a 20-year. Kidnapping was a 28-year. aggravated assault was a 20-year, and all of those charges were concurrent. So I think that the sentence that he did get was favorable sentence to him, and then on top of that, he had the consecutive 28-year sentence, but along with that he had another aggravated assault for a 28-year sentence that he had that all were running concurrent. And because of all of those charges running concurrent, I think that the amount of time that he actually had, and the fact that he was a serial rapist and stated that he probably would have continued to do that until he actually got caught again. And I do have a concern about what he states is his trigger for actually committing the crime. His trigger for committing those crimes were, having problems. You know, not someone that did something or, a family history. However, I'm just not, this system, at least for me, I'm just not comfortable with granting him parole, although he will be, has a sentence end date of in 2020. But at this point in time, I'm not supportive of parole. But that's just my decision.
Okay. Dr. Ray?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Rittenhouse. Sometimes the board has to make decisions. They're very tough decisions that each board member has to make independent of each other. I think reading the information, the documents that's presented to the board, one would come to the conclusion that Mr. Johnson has come to. However, I think in sitting here and listening to Mr. Brunner as well as Mr. Rice, I think that it would behoove the board to consider, and I'm only speaking as one board member and not trying to influence the board one way or the other, to consider providing, giving him an opportunity for home arrest. As you know, that even if this board voted to provide him parole or home arrest or any other type of parole today, it would not become effective until March 18th of 2018. It would not become effective at this time because we cannot grant it until his parole, until he's eligible for parole. And he would not be eligible for parole for what that's a little more than 3 months before he would still have to remain incarcerated. And I think just as one board member, rather than a 412 or absolute discharge, I would be willing to, as one board member, to consider home arrest. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir. All right, then these conversations are always beneficial. I'm going to make a motion then, considering the sentence end date, which will occur relatively soon, and the very good point that it would probably be good after such a long prison term to have kind of a transitional period back to the community that's supervised. I'm going to make a motion to grant home arrest and to deny general parole and absolute discharge for Mr. Bruni.
Second.
Agree.
Agree.
And disagree.
All right. 1 second, Mr. Bruni. I need to make sure that I mark this correctly. Okay, Mr. Bruni, the board has voted to grant home arrest to you, and you heard the reasons, you heard our discussion, that it would be of value to you to have a bit of supervision for your transition back into the community, but you also heard that it can't occur until after March 18th of 2018, so that you, because that's your parole eligible date certified by the Department of Corrections. You'll have the usual, the conditions of home arrest. Obviously, the sex offender conditions will apply, which will include no contact with the victims. You'll have all of these explained to you. When you're on home arrest status, you're still technically an inmate. So you'll have a parole officer, but you'll need to follow very closely, and I know you will. I mean, you're a very detail-oriented person based on your materials here. But you'll need to make sure that you follow. I'm sure there'll be no alcohol use, you know, as part of the conditions. There may be random testing for drugs and alcohol. Probably not operating motor vehicle since it's been a while, but that'll be at the discretion of your parole officer. And follow all the mandatory conditions. I mentioned no contact with victims, victim family. I'm not sure, was there any restitution owed, sir? I didn't note any, but.
No, ma'am, there was no restitution.
No restitution. I didn't see any, but sometimes it slips by. I think that would be about it, unless my fellow board members.
$65 supervision fee.
How much?
$65.
I'm sorry, yes, there is. There's a $65 supervision fee, which starts 2 months, I believe, after.
It's left up to the board. We usually do it for 2 months.
2 months, okay. Yes, ma'am. And the other thing is, you mentioned that you have some people who are willing to support you. The department requires, and you have a couple of months to get this together, the department requires that you have at least 2 months of rent or whatever the rent fee for your residence on the books, so that you've got that money. You've got at least 2 months before your release. So that would be a requirement.
Madam Chair, I just want to make
sure
that you have checked these conditions for so that the conditions that the board will be requiring, so that they will be on record.
Yes, Ms. Mayor. And so all mandatory conditions, all sex offender conditions, no alcohol abuse, random drug tests, may not operate a motor vehicle, no contact with victim. There is no restitution, so. Okay, and I'll check abide by institution rules because it will be a halfway house, most likely, so. All right, Mr. Bruni, do you have any questions?
I can go to Sacramento and Tucson.
That would be at the Department of Corrections discretion. We really, the board doesn't have any discretion over that, but you'll have someone to work with. So work with your CO3 about that.
Okay.
All right, sir?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For your time.
Chair, may I just say to Mr. Bruni that it will be in his best interest, and this is not a requirement. If once you leave this hearing today, if you do not go around bragging about what happened, because you're going to be there for another 3 months, and some inmates might not want to see you out early. So if I were you, I would be very diplomatic in what I would say in leaving this hearing, sir. Just
thank you, sir.
That's very good advice. Yes, sometimes other inmates try to mess with you. So we appreciate. Thank you very much for participating today, Mr. Bruni, and your hearing is concluded.
Thank you very much.
And at this time, it is now 10 o'clock.